The title of my presentation is Bridging the Gap, Disparities in Smoking Rates Across Race, Sex, Education, and Income. So we're going to look at the gaps within the disparities for each of these variables, but we're also going to look at the change in these gaps over a 10-year period and kind of see where we're moving over time. So just my disclosure, I used to be affiliated with America's Health Rankings. I'm not working with them anymore, but they're a partner of APHA, but anything in this presentation is views of myself, not of the organizations themselves. So just a little background. Cigarette smoking is the leading preventable cause of death in the U.S. Currently, 19% of adults smoke, and for every one person who dies from smoking, there are at least 30 people living with a serious smoking-related illness. These include cancer, heart disease, stroke, lung diseases, COPD, among many others. But there's also a wide variation in smoking rates, which is something that I'm going to go into in this presentation. So the impact of smoking. Smoking kills more than 480,000 Americans yearly, and 41,000 of these deaths are from secondhand smoke alone. Tobacco use has killed more than 20 million people prematurely since the Surgeon General's first report in 1964, and smoking is the most common form of tobacco use. And just to give you an idea of how many people 20 million is, that's the combined population, the combined current populations of New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Philadelphia, and Phoenix. Those are the six largest cities in the U.S., so 20 million people is equal to actually a little bit over the population of those six cities combined. So that's a huge impact. So the purpose of this study, we examined the change in smoking rates over a 10-year period by both demographic and geographic characteristics. So we broke it down at looking at the U.S. Aggregate kind of measure for these smoking variables, and then we also looked at it on a state-by-state basis. I'm mostly going to talk about the U.S. aggregate, but I'll talk a little bit about the states in general as well. So for the methods of this, national data with state-specific rates from the America's Health Rankings reports for the years 2004 through 2013 was analyzed to determine the change in smoking rates over time, and then also the change in disparities within each of the variables of race, sex, education, and income groups. So here's just a graph of disparities in smoking by race over the 10-year period. You can see that there's a pretty sizable gap between each of those. You can see the top line in orange. Those are black smokers. Right below that, we have white smokers. And then we go down to Hispanic and then Asians with the lowest level of smoking. You'll see that around the year 2011, there's a pretty sizable jump. But that's a lot attributable to the change in the wording for how the survey or how the data was collected. The data that we use is from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. But in 2011, a change from the definition was percent of U.S. adults over age 18 who currently smoke to U.S. adults who have smoked at least 100 cigarettes in their lifetime and who currently smoke. So just that wording change caused a little bit of a jump in the data. But you can see the disparity gap kind of stays the same even as the rates are kind of going down over time. Next, this is the graph of disparities in smoking by sex. We see the same kind of gap. They follow the same pattern, but there is a difference between male smoking and female smoking that seems to stay separated. Next, here's a look at the disparities in smoking by education. So we see at the top in that blue line, those are individuals with less than a high school education. We go down below that to those with a high school education. Some college is below that, and then down way at the bottom, we have college graduates with the lowest level of smoking, and they're pretty far below the rest. And then lastly, we have disparities in smoking by income. It kind of follows the education curve, where we have those with the least amount of income having the highest rates of smoking, and those with the greatest income of greater than $75,000 a year with the lowest rates of smoking. All right. And so just kind of look at the states to give you an idea of where in the country we see the highest rates. West Virginia has the highest rate of smoking, with 27.3% of their total population who currently smokes. And then we have Utah with the lowest at 10.3% of the population who currently smokes. So that's a pretty large difference, just on a state-by-state basis. It varies across the country. There are pockets, especially in the kind of along the Stroke Belt, along the Deep South. We have higher rates of smoking, obesity, a lot of associated problems. So here are the largest disparity gaps in smoking rates are seen in education and income. So the disparity gap is just that the highest percentage of smoking within that variable, and then you just subtract out the lowest percentage of smoking. So we can see that on the left with education level, there's a 19.6% percentage spread between those with less than a high school education and those who are college graduates, going all the way from 27.2% all down to just 7.6%. And similarly with income level, there's a 17.9% percentage spread between those who make less than $25,000 annually and those who make greater than $75,000. And so just to kind of give you a visual of that, that's we took the difference between those two rates. So that's for education, the 19.6 percentage gap, and then in income, we have that 17.9 percentage gap. So over the 10 years, the gap between racial groups was reduced by only 2.2 percentage points, and that's actually the only variable where the disparity gap got smaller. So the gaps with between education, sex, and income groups actually increased. They weren't sizable increases, but they are starting to get farther apart, which is something that we need to address when looking at kind of policy issues or addressing these problems, is that those groups really do differentiate. And then the overall smoking rates decrease, but the gaps within demographics remain. So we are looking at a decreased rate, but we need to address those groups separately. So looking at the trends over time, in the U.S. there are now more former smokers than there are current smokers. So that's great news for moving forward, and we need to kind of use that to look at our strategies for moving forward and kind of increasing that rate of decreasing the smoking rates. But also tobacco use is changing, so there's less reliance on cigarettes and more on other products like e-cigarettes. So that's a whole new variable into the system and how we need to address that differently, and what kind of access people have to those. 87% of individuals first use cigarettes by 18 years of age, and 96% of them first use them by age 26. So it is very important to get at an early age, not to say that it's not important to address it at those over age 26, but we are seeing youth who are smoking at a much higher rate and earlier on. So just to kind of recap our conclusions from this presentation. To effectively address the smoking rates across states, disparities that exist across demographic characteristics must be addressed. And moving forward, increases in the price of tobacco products have shown to prevent initiation, promote cessation, and reduce the prevalence and intensity of use. Because we, as you saw previously, those with the lowest income levels tend to be the highest smokers. So they don't have, if we keep increasing the price of cigarettes, it's going to be where it's not feasible for them to afford anything else. And that's hopefully going to weed out some of the smokers. Also, it's been shown that tobacco control program activity and increases in tobacco taxes together have a greater reduction in overall cigarette consumption. And there's some contact information.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I have used the behavior risk factors. Can you talk? Can
I don't know. I know that that's correct. They started to use the cell phone usage to be able, because it is a telephone survey for those who don't know, to contact individuals to get those data points. So cell phone users did broaden the scope of people that they were able to address. So that may have accounted for some of the difference, but I don't know to what effect it did. So your question is, do I know why there was such a large difference between the two states? We don't have the reasons why. We just have the overall data for all of the states. There are similar patterns. So the states do tend to stay pretty similar as the years go on. So we do see those pockets. So it is that policy within the states. So some states are better at dealing with policy issues and have better tobacco cessation and control policies. So we do see patterns across the country of policies, but we don't know it's to the reasons why. So we look at this data and we collect the data, and then we pass this data forward to other organizations who can help hopefully use this to create policy.
I have a guess. It's a big church in Utah.
Okay. Since you are from your data, the young people.
Mm-hmm. We do have the.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have it on me right now. We do have the data broken down by age as well. We look at many variables. These are just the four that I picked out that we thought would have the greatest disparity gaps. But age, as I said, most people start smoking by a certain age. So we see a very kind of bottom heavy distribution when looking at age. So I don't have that information on me, but we do stratify it by age as well. And you can go to America's Health Rankings website, and you can see all of that data on there, and it's broken down by state if you want to look at it, and you can kind of look at the trends over time as well. And it's very easy to click around, and you can play with different variables.
Just as a follow-up to that question, actually,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that there would be geographic disparities with differences within each state?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's also something that,
yeah. And a lot more. You'll see states that are more rural or states that are more urban. You'll see pockets within those regions within the states as well.
So the data on the people who start younger.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't want to try and make a guess and guess wrong. I'm assuming it's ever smokers, but I'm not sure the answer to that question. Absolutely. Because it's hard to measure that data.
Right. So throw everybody into that when smoking when you started in the '50s or sixties, it's a lot different than
when
you started.
Right. And also, when you ask that question, it's self-reported data, so people are going to kind of fudge the years a little bit when they answer the questions. So we might not be accurate on the exact age that people start smoking because it is self-reported data. That's something that the CDC and their, find the name of their report. But the CDC has recommendations for kind of improving the inequalities within the different rates. But that's that's what the CDC has concluded for what they see has been the most efficient strategy thus far. Not to say that it's the only strategy, because there's so many others as well, but that's kind of the general what has proved to be the most efficient.
Because then just by raising the tax and raising the cost of tobacco, you're making it less affordable. But that also implies that just by making it less affordable, you're going to be less likely to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And the addiction of that is way stronger.
Right.
So that it could be disproportionately affected in terms of cost.
Right. And that's why I wanted to kind of clarify, let's see, in this slide, that not only the increases in the taxes, but also that along with tobacco control program activity has proven to be the most effective. So it's kind of reiterating it through different levels. That'll be interesting to see kind of how that affects the age range and how that affects the age of initiation as well, if that does change.
Does anyone else have any questions for Dr. Jefferson?
No, I have a comment.
Oh, please go ahead.
Just made me think of something. If you go back far enough, I believe there wasn't much of a disparity in smoking rates between income and education. You have to go pretty far back. Maybe you're familiar with it. I don't know. You seem to be a smoking person. Maybe you're familiar with this. And I do know that there's a current disparity happening in North America that's happening right before our eyes, and it's something that you could start to look at if the survey examines it. And so the sugary drink industry is currently really concerned about the drop in use, and it's happening right now amongst the rich and the educated, and it's starting to trickle down, just like it happened with smoking, and it started to trickle down. So the smoking cessation first happened amongst the rich and the educated as well. So it'd be interesting, I mean, we don't have data for that change with smoking. It'd be interesting to see if you can follow just that kind of nutritional intake, because it's happening right now for those sugary drinks and their health impacts.
Where is that data from that the sugary drinks has kind of followed that same pattern, just from sales data, or?
If you follow the proceedings of their last industry meeting, they pay attention to it, so they do their own work. I don't know if you can get a hold of that data, but I assume that your survey is also, there's got to be a health survey somewhere in the U.S. that asks about whether or not you drink pop.
Yeah.
Would you call it soda? Soda.
Soda
or pop. Unless you're in Atlanta and then it's all Coke. Is that right?
I think here in Chicago it's pop, but everywhere else.
Chicago, pop. All right, so you're in the right place. In Canada it's pop.
Have you ever tried to correlate at a state level the sort of politics with the smoking rates, and maybe look at the spread in the last presidential election or something?
I haven't done that. I don't know if we have the data on that level within America's Health Rankings that we have access to, but that'd be interesting to look at. Right, annual household income rather than just individual income. We just have the annual income per person. We don't look at the household income, but that would give a better idea how many dependents the person has and how much expendable income they have. But that's not included in our information.